Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What are the other misconceptions about what a design system is?
Oh God, there's so much to say. I think one problem that we have is that I think people think that design system means one thing, and they kind of have this quite specific implementation of that in their heads. And I wrote a blog post on this recently. I think that it's really interesting because it's really changed the communications directive for people like me who are often sort of selling design systems into organizations. Because maybe 5 to 10 years ago, that conversation always had to start with an explanation of what a design system was from scratch. So you'd say design system and people would be like, what? What's that? Now you say design system, and even stakeholders who are quite removed from design systems and haven't necessarily worked on one directly are usually coming to the table now, in my experience, with some kind of preconception about what a design system is. So we're almost now having to, I think, sort of help people to unlearn what they think they know about design systems and then rebuild from there. And I think for me, we're in quite a dangerous place there because those preconceptions are not aligned.
Greetings from an icy, snowy and bitterly cold Dublin, folks. And as always, a very warm welcome to This is HCD. And we welcome everyone to the show and are delighted to have you with us for the next 30 or 40 minutes. My name is Jerry Scullion and I'm a designer, I'm an educator and I'm the host of This is HCD. As I said, based in the wonderful city of Dublin, Ireland. Now, our goal here is to have conversations that inspire and help move the dial forward for organisations to become more human-centred in their approach to solving complex business and societal problems. I caught up with Amy Hoop, a content designer and design system consultant based in the UK. And in this conversation, we drill into what a design system is and what a design system is not, and talk about the governance processes around managing design systems. Leaning on Amy's 7-year experience, which included working at the GDS, or as Amy says, GDS, not the GDS in the UK, and more. Amy's a total rock star. And I know you're going to love listening to her. Now, if you like what we're doing at This is HCD, please help us out by leaving a review wherever you listen to this podcast. It only takes a couple of minutes. It really helps us, helps other people find the podcast and so forth. We want to be able to try and reach as many people as possible. And those algorithms love your beautiful words about This is HCD. And obviously, our preference is a 5-star review there if you do like that. Or you can go one better by becoming a patron. You can get an ad-free stream of the podcast for as little as €1.66 per month. We know, Jerry, it's €20 per year. You get a shout out as thanks. And there's other plans there we can get exclusive items too. And as I say before, all the money goes towards editing, hosting and maintaining our website. So if you do like what we do and you want to support us, we're now over 230 episodes deep into human-centered design goodness. Let's jump into the episode. Amy, welcome to This is HCD. Maybe start off and tell us a little bit about what you do. And how do you describe yourself when you're at a, say, a dinner party or at a family event?
Disarming, yeah. That's how I would describe myself, ironically.
Disarming,
disarming, yeah. Charming and disarming. No, so I am a consultant based in the UK, and I focus on two areas mainly. So first one's content design. And the second one is design systems. And I often mix the two. So I quite often end up working on design system documentation and kind of content strategy and stuff, which blends those two worlds nicely. But my current contract with my client that I'm working with right now is as design systems manager. It's the job title that I've given myself. So yeah, I do a kind of mix of leading design systems work and focusing on documentation stuff.
So you're kind of mixing the how and the why. So how you build it with design systems and why you build it, I guess, is trying to understand the underlying need for the content. Is that fair to say?
I think so. Yeah, I think most things are a blend of those things.
So I know we've got mutual, I guess, friends that have connected us over the last couple of months. You used to work at the GDS. Is that how you got started in content design?
The GDS. Just GDS. GDS. Yeah. The GDS is like the way that my mum would describe it, I think. No offense, mum.
You know, probably not a similar, too dissimilar age to your mum.
Similar age, sure. Yeah, I used to work at GDS, so that was kind of where I got started with design systems. So I joined them in, 2017, and right. I worked there for 3 years, and then I started working as a consultant off the back of that. Always right. good to have a GDS gig under your belt if you're going to try and be a consultant, because people
it
like
seems
that.
The badge of honor, you know, you've done your time, you've earned your stripes, so to speak.
Yeah. It's funny, people see it like that, like you've done your time, and actually it was the best, most enjoyable job I've ever had, I think. So it's a like very it. Nice badge of honor to earn. Why was it the best?
Yeah.
Oh, just the people were the best. Just like I felt like every day I got to go and work with really clever people that made me want to be a better human being, and that was really nice. I think hopefully they did make me a bit of a better human being.
Yeah, it's it seems to be like one of those places where they really everyone goes in there and they lift their game, and
yeah.
they learn an awful lot from working in a really powerful way, like, you know, to deliver good. Mm-hmm. That's my experience of speaking to several alumni of GDS.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think the culture at GDS is really strong, and I think it's that kind of shared set of values that exists there that kind of makes it such a nice place to work, because you quite often find yourself at GDS really arguing over the detail and the best way to achieve things. But what I found at GDS was I was never arguing about the premise of the things that we were trying to do. It all felt like we were all quite aligned in terms of wanting to make things inclusive and accessible and do the right thing. And sort of ethically, I would say everybody that I worked with anyway felt quite aligned, which was really nice.
You didn't have to justify the existence of design within the process. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. No need to sort of justify the importance of design, at least not at the level I was working at. I'm sure some of the people that worked there at a more senior level had to have those conversations, but we were quite well shielded from it, I think. But also just, yeah, things like accessibility, I'm realizing kind of quite rare to be able to go and work somewhere where you don't have to ever talk about why you should make things accessible or why you should try and make things inclusive.
It's baked into the DNA, I guess, at somewhere like GDS, not their GDS.
The GDS.
And, you know, it's how many years are you out of there now? You're out of there 2 or 3 years you've left.
Yeah, coming up to 3 years now.
Coming up to 3 years. So you've been working mainly, and especially at GDS, you were looking at design systems, okay? For people who don't know what a design system is, I have an idea. I've never gone. Don't ask me to explain. Okay, I have to explain it. To me, when maybe about 10, 12 years ago, we used to look at the atomic level of the components required to build applications and websites and everything that we do in a digital manner. And we would look at the atomic level of the HTML and how they come together. Using Brad Frost and Andy Clark, I did an awful lot of work in that space way back in the day. And we really kind of leveraging the patterns and the interactions to standardize them, so you've got a more of a unified experience from an interaction design level and also from a service design level as well, and how they all interact. Is that a bad explanation, or how
no, can I improve? It's definitely not a bad explanation. I think I'm trying to actually shift the way that I talk about design systems and think about them and approach the work of creating them. So I think most of the time when you ask someone what a design system is, they will give you a definition that's tied to the way that we tend to implement them today. So they'll say something like, oh, it's a mix of tools and processes and kind of artifacts that we set up to try and make things more efficient, consistent, and scalable. And usually that will include a code base that groups things in these kind of atomic buckets, like you've mentioned Brad Frost there, which is one way of organizing and categorizing things in a design system. And it may also have a kind of design library counterpart, so maybe integration with something like Figma or Sketch.
Yeah.
And then it'll also have documentation, and that often lives on a documentation website. Sometimes it lives embedded in the tools that you're using for your design system. Mm-hmm. And then around that, we also have common processes and sort of services. So things like support, how does a design system team support its users, and contribution. So how can we help people from within the organization where the design system exists to contribute their own experiences and expertise into it? Mm-hmm. And what I've started to think about and to talk about is the idea that that's just how we do design systems most of the time today. Mm. But something that really sparked a kind of new way of thinking about this for me was something that Gina Ann said a couple of years back, which was design systems are just your design practice as a system. And I think that's a really helpful way to look at them. So if we think, if your organization designs things and delivers them, then whether or not you've created, in quote marks, a design system, you already have a design system of some description. Yeah. And it might not be set up to meet your goals, but you'll have something, even if that's loads of localized style guides and fragmented code bases and a really sort of creaky handover process between designers and developers. Start by thinking about that as your design system, and then think about how you can sort of shepherd it towards something that better meets your goals, whatever those goals are right now. So, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I'm learning stuff here on the fly, actually. So in olden times of, say, like 5 to 10 years ago,
way back,
people were downloading like bootstraps and all of these different component libraries and just kind of going, well, that's it, done. And I'm like, no, it's not. And I was trying to find the vocabulary and the rationale about how it's more than this. And it seemed like it's obviously matured an awful lot more since then. But every organization has their own design process. Mm-hmm. You know, we follow similar patterns, but, you know, the people involved are all unique. They have different nuances. Is there a way, and you could probably shoot me with a stare when I say this, is there a way that's become standard? Is there like a software or something out there that works with the flexibility of the design processes that might lead you to be able to have a unified system that includes documentation, design libraries, and design systems under the one hood, so to speak?
You mean like a single kind of tool or platform that does everything for you for design systems?
Yeah.
I think there are definitely attempts to create those. I'm probably not going to mention specific providers of them right now because, A, I think I'm probably a little removed from the ins and outs of what individual providers can do. Yeah. Also, I don't want to kind of inadvertently market anybody's product. I think there are attempts to do that, but I think part of why I've started to talk about design systems in this way, in this more flexible way, is because I think that we have perhaps started to get to a place where we're trying really hard to sort of formularize and standardize something that actually is quite nuanced and quite context dependent. Mm-hmm. So I've worked on 4 design systems sort of full time for a kind of sustained period of time now. And I've consulted on many more in between that. Yeah. And in my experience, every single design system has a slightly different set of requirements and has a slightly different set of tools and processes that it uses to meet those requirements. So I guess I would be very skeptical about whether there is one tool or one platform that can meet those needs.
The reason why I say that is because, again, I'm not in this space anymore. And I know there was Confluence for places that included the processes around how to use these different things, and some parts of the business technology would tend to say, well, that's where we put all our documentation, you have to use this. Mm-hmm. And I was just trying to see, was there has there been an evolution in that space around a unified product? And it's probably good that there's not, because, you know, if there's another tool in there as well, it's just another thing for people to use. So how do you go about creating, like, say, you know, there's a startup who's maybe 5 years old and they Google amyhoop.co.uk. That is a and they say, okay, listen, look, you know, we're really interested in content design and design systems. Totally, we've had a number of designers working on the team. And we've got feedback that there's lots of different, the system is behaving different in different ways. And we think it's going to save us some money. Okay. Do you think that's a pretty common framing of how people and why people would start this kind of process?
I think it depends, the standard cop-out answer. Yeah. I think it depends on where you are. So one thing that I've observed is that in general, and I am speaking generally because there are, of course, exceptions to this. In the US, for example, the design systems kind of space seems to be a few years ahead of where we are here in the UK.
Why is that?
So I think, why is that? I don't know. I don't know if it's kind of something to do with tech and Silicon Valley and the fact that, you know, a lot of kind of tech is slightly, you know, kind of things start there sometimes. I don't know if it's anything to do with that. I don't know if it's a cultural thing. I've got no idea, honestly, why it happens, but I do think that it's the case. And I say that because I kind of talk quite frequently to other design system consultants. And actually, there aren't that many of us in the UK, and there are a lot of them in the US. And when I talk to the ones in the US, they're always kind of, the perception I get from them is they're very rarely being asked to go in and set up design systems anymore, because a lot of organizations, you know, by and large, are kind of there by now. So their questions are more like, we already have a design system, but it's not really working, or how do we get people to use it? Or how can we kind of reinvigorate our design system somehow? Whereas in the UK, I think there are still an awful lot of people going, we should probably have a design system. So yes, that's maybe typical of conversations that I would have with clients in the UK. But yeah, I think it kind of, what I often find is at the point that I start to engage with an organization, there has already been at least one, often more, attempts to create something like a design system.
Yeah.
And usually they're kind of approaching me at the point that they want to really sort of formalize that work, and they want to start really getting it off the ground and throwing some money at it. And they're kind of like, where do we start? You know, how do we move this forward?
Well, what would you say? You've worked in this space for 6-7 years at this stage.
Yeah.
We've covered some of the misconceptions, but what would you say are the other misconceptions about design systems? So when you go to, say, conferences that are general UX conferences, and you hear people saying, oh, I love design systems. Yeah, I use Bootstrap as my favorite design system. You know, what are the other misconceptions about what a design system is?
Oh, God, there's so much to say. I think one problem that we have is what I've sort of alluded to so far, which is that I think people think that design system means one thing, and they kind of have this quite specific implementation of that in their heads. And I wrote a blog post on this recently. I think that it's really interesting because it's really changed the communications directive for people like me who are often sort of selling design systems into organizations. Because maybe 5 to 10 years ago, that conversation always had to start with an explanation of what a design system was from scratch. So you'd say design system and people would be like, what? What's that? Now you say design system, and even stakeholders who are quite removed from design systems and haven't necessarily worked on one directly are usually coming to the table now, in my experience, with some kind of preconception about what a design system is. So we're almost now having to, I think, sort of help people to unlearn what they think they know about design systems and then rebuild from there. And I think for me, we're in quite a dangerous place there, because those preconceptions are not aligned. It's not like everybody has the same mental model of a design system. They just have quite a strong one. So often what I'm doing is kind of going, I know you all think you know what a design system is, but the idea that you have in your head and you have in your head and you have in your head are probably all slightly different. So we need to talk about what we mean when we say design system here. And even in circles that kind of know more about design systems, I think you can see this playing out. Like something, there's this sort of trope that appears all the time on Twitter, and there's quite often blog posts about it and stuff, of people saying, oh, that's not a design system, that's just a UI kit, or that's not a design system, that's just a component library. And I think it's based on this premise that we all have this single idea about what a design system is and the right way to do it. And what I'm starting to see now, and I hope that I'm kind of contributing to that, is this pushback against this sort of dogmatic idea of design systems and this definition of them. into something that's much more flexible and much more kind of changeable depending on the context. So I think, yeah, misconception one is that design system means one thing everywhere. Okay. And then the other big one that I see a lot is the role of contribution in design systems being really sort of misunderstood, often not by people who are experienced in working on design systems or who've had some experience of working on design systems, but usually from stakeholders who perhaps are invested in the design system for one reason or another, who see contribution as a way to grow a design system faster. So the idea is, you know, well, we only have a small design system team here, but if we can get every designer and developer in the organization to contribute, then we can grow the design system much, much quicker. Yeah. And it's like, that's great if you're going to create the time and space and permission for them to do that alongside their day job. But presumably, you also still want them to do the thing that you've hired them into the organization to do. And actually, when it boils down to it, you probably want them to do that more than you want them to contribute to the design system. So in order for them to contribute to the design system, something's got to give. And usually that thing is speed. So when we work, when we're working in design system teams and we work with external contributors, it's often a much slower process because you have to fit things around their other priorities than it would be for a design system team to just create something for themselves. And I should say, I think contribution is really valuable. I feel really strongly that design systems should support contribution for lots of reasons, but I just think the speed isn't one of them. And I think it's often seen and explained as this kind of shortcut to growing a system. And actually it's the opposite. It probably slows us down more than anything else.
What are the cons for creating a design system?
Sorry, say that again.
What are the cons for creating a design system?
Well, again, I think I'd go back to what I said earlier. I think when we talk about creating a design system, I'd argue you probably already have one. If what we're talking about is formally investing in a design system, what are the downsides of that? Then I guess I don't know if there's a downside to it, but I think there can be sort of mixed expectations about what a design system is going to do. So I wouldn't say that there's a con, because I see it as just aligning your design and development processes with your goals better. That's what I think we mean when we say creating a design system. But really, I think,
The reason I jump in there, Amy, was just because in my experience, some of my peers kind of threw their eyes up to heaven when a design system was in place, because it created another hurdle in order for approval processes to get into the design system, in order for things to happen that weren't already present in the design system. And it can somewhat disempower the freedom that, say, service designers, if service design is a relatively new thing in an organization, and traditionally UX or interaction design, whatever it was, has already been in place, and the service designer might kind of see that there's actually a need for other patterns that don't exist, it's yet another hurdle for, you have to suddenly work with this new team, for the design system team. Is that a realistic con, do you think?
I think that's more to do with the type of design system that you build and how you create it and manage it than design systems in general. So if you have a very strict design system and your outlook is that everything that gets used in our products and services has to have some kind of presence in the design system, then yes, I definitely think that's going to become problematic, and the design system is going to end up being a bottleneck for what you want to do. But I think for me, that's an argument for making sure that product work and individual service work can move at its own pace and can be decoupled from design system work. Because I think something that I see, a pattern that I see a lot, is when people are pitching for investment for design systems, they talk a lot about duplication of effort. So they say, look at all this money we're wasting. This person over here is building buttons. This person over here is building buttons. Times that by 50 teams. We're spending millions of pounds on our buttons, and we could just make one button and everybody would be happy.
Yeah.
And we'll save so much money. And that's a very kind of reductive explanation of what's happening and sort of promise of design systems. Mm. And it's, I think, necessarily simplified to just get the message across to people who perhaps don't understand it well. Mm. But one of the downsides of telling that story is that the second you get funding, everybody in the organization suddenly finds duplication of effort to be an intolerable, urgent problem to solve.
Yeah.
So it's like they've been tolerating it for years. You've just had to spend months persuading them that it's a problem worth addressing. And then the second that a penny gets spent on the design system, they're like, hold on a second, that person over there has made a text input and that person over there has made one. And this mustn't happen ever again now that we have a design system. You promised us it was going to stop this. And actually, I think you still need to be able to diverge before you can converge on a single design system solution for anything. Mm. Right? We have to incorporate that experimentation, that kind of contextual adaptation. That has to still be part of our process. So yeah. A, design systems take time to kind of populate. It can't solve every problem from day one. And B, I think having a design system doesn't mean that you should never be able to have individual product solutions ever again. Quite the opposite, I think. It's a prerequisite to a design system success that you can allow that multiplication to happen before converging on something for everybody to use.
So let's talk about the governance of design systems. Okay, who should be involved in the governance of the design system moving on? I know you're going to say probably a design systems team, but generally what's made up of that? And then the second part to that question is, who are you seeing as being the accountability owner for the service of the design system within the business? Is it a technology ownership, or is it traditional, or maybe a product management ownership, or is it the head of design? I'm keen to understand that dynamic a little bit more as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, I definitely would always advocate having a design system team working on a design system to kind of manage things like contribution and support and conversations about what goes into the design system or not. I think
it'll be full-time employees.
Yeah, I think so. I think you kind of have to, like, someone once made this comparison. I can't remember who it was, I'm afraid, but that, you know, you don't retire your accounts team. And I think that's kind of how you have to see design systems. Like, they're providing organizational infrastructure that needs maintenance and governance. And that doesn't just happen by itself. So you don't build a design system and then send the team away that's built it, because it's going to go out of date. And it's a living entity that needs nourishment and needs cultivation over time. So I definitely would advocate always having a full-time team working on a design system.
Yeah.
In terms of who owns it ultimately, I think that's really tough. And I've seen it kind of be different in different organizations. Sometimes it's engineering, sometimes it's design, sometimes it's product, sometimes it's something else. I think for me, something that I've tried to encourage and push for is to at least have equality of ownership or neutrality of ownership when it comes to design or development. So I think it can be problematic when a design system is ultimately owned by engineering or design and, you know, therefore more one or the other, because it starts to create an imbalanced system. Like, if you have a design system that's owned by engineering, quite often you'll see that it's an engineering-led design system. Yeah. And there's more of an emphasis on code than there is on supporting designers, for example.
Yeah.
Likewise, if you have design systems that are ultimately owned by a design division in the organization, then unless those two disciplines work really closely together, you're probably going to see an overemphasis on things like, oh, how do we create our Figma library, and less emphasis on what does this actually look like in production.
Yeah.
So I think it's possible you can have engineering teams owning design systems and being very mindful of the design side of them and vice versa. But I think it's easier if you can either have somebody in a neutral role owning that work, so product, for example, or if you can somehow create shared ownership so that it's a sort of dual managed thing between design and engineering. I think that's what they do at GitHub. And from what I hear, that works quite well for them. They have a sort of design lead and an engineering lead managing that work. And they sort of share ownership of it.
Which sounds cool. Well, one of the things that I'm seeing in Australia is the emergence of design operations. So I know Dave Malouf does quite a lot of work in design operations as well. Is this a similar thing? Because it sounds like over the last maybe five or six years, it's evolved a lot more into the operationalization of design. When you're starting looking at the process and the actual the process of how we're creating things, is there a sort of a convergence there, or am I missing the point?
No, not missing the point at all. I think there's definitely an overlap between those things. The relationship, as I see it, is design systems form part of design operations. So I think of design ops as a broader kind of question about how do we enable design to happen within our organization. And that covers things like how do we hire designers? How do we onboard them? How do they progress in their careers? What tools do they use? You know, how do we expect them to work? What processes do they follow? Design systems, I think, are something a little bit more specific, which we'll touch on. Yeah, there'll be design systems will be impacted by those things, and they will impact those things, and they have to work within that decision framework that's been set by the design ops at the organization. But I do see it as a kind of a subset of design operations, I think.
So going back to the governance piece, I keep on going back to the governance. People are like,
we love governance, don't we?
People are rolling their eyes and going, Scullion is on the governance bandwagon again. So what skills are in there? Okay, because I have a lot of friends and I'm coaching an organization that are heavily on the development side of things, and they're trying to upskill into design as well. Okay, so I'm looking at that organization specifically when I'm thinking about this. The development side of the fence, who's represented in the design system governance piece, or are they?
I'm not sure I understand the question. How do you mean who's represented in?
Do you have a full stack technical developer within the design governance? Because there's a reliance, and I'm trying to understand the inclusivity of the design system to make sure that it's not just another silo that has been created.
Yeah. I understand what you mean. So I think when you say governance in this context, do you mean in terms of who maintains the design system, who builds it, who maintains it, who keeps it going, who makes decisions about it? Is that what you mean?
Exactly. So are they represented from a hub and spoke perspective? Do you have members? And you said it's a full-time role, so you could have somebody who is, for want of a better way, on a sabbatical in the design systems team for like a year, 2 years, but the reporting line is still going back into engineering.
I think like what feels really important to me, whatever happens, is that you have a balance of representation between designers and developers. I think what's most relevant for design systems is front end development. There will need to be conversations with back end sometimes, but I think most of the time it's front end development. And I think in my experience, the people who work full time on design systems tend to act as kind of conduits between the community of practice that they are part of, whether that's front end development or design or a specific type of design, and the design system. So I think that quite often the structure, as I've seen it, has been you're kind of member of this community of practice. So you work as part of the front end development team, and your role day to day is on the design system team. And so you have a relationship with those two things.
Okay.
But certainly I think it shouldn't be kind of just designers working on the design system.
Okay. It's really interesting because when I'm speaking to you, I see somebody who's flicking between different roles. I see like the design system piece, and then there's also the compassionate side for what it's like for a designer working in those roles. Is that the key skills for somebody working in design systems? Because you're balancing it really nicely. I can hear it in the conversation where you're saying, well, it's like for them, and it's also like for them. So you're like a bridge between these two worlds, effectively.
Yeah, I mean, I try to be. I think it helps that whenever I've worked on design system teams, I've sat in perhaps a more neutral role. So I mean, my background is content design, which arguably is a type of design. But yeah. As a content designer working on a design system team, quite often I'm writing developer documentation. So I was always sort of sat in that midpoint between everything I'm doing is for designers and developers. So I'm thinking about both of those groups of people.
Okay.
And then in my other roles, I've acted as design systems lead or design systems manager. And again, because my background isn't in sort of UI or UX design or engineering, I tend to be, I think, quite kind of balanced between those two different groups of people. I think in terms of the skills needed, I definitely think kind of empathy and people skills are really important. And also just systems thinking. I think if you focus, even if we take the kind of people side of it out of the equation, if you only focused your attention on one of those groups, designers or engineers, then you're not really creating a design system that can serve the whole picture, because you're just catering to one particular area of your design process, and you're leaving a big bit of it overlooked.
Yeah. I just want to go back to that piece. People are like, where is he going to go next?
Where is he going?
With the design systems manager piece. Okay. So when you're managing the system, okay. Mm-hmm. Walk me through about I don't want to say the governance word again. Walk me through about the decision-making process about when you say no to things that go into the design system.
So I think, if at all possible, and this is probably just a really obvious governance thing to say that's true about everything, but you don't want to be making those decisions reactively if you can avoid it. So I think if someone comes to you with something and they're like, oh, this should go in the design system, and you don't have something to point them to that says it's not going to and this is why, then you're on the back foot, and that can really start to break down trust in, you know, quite quickly. So I think it's worth having a think from the outset, as early as you can, really, about, you know, what do we consider to be something that should go into the design system? Because as I said earlier, I don't think design systems, they're not just there to describe what exists within your organization. They're there to provide common solutions to common problems. So if it's not a common problem, then I'd argue don't create it as something that lives within your design system. So I think it's worth having some kind of criteria or something that describes what your design system is for and what it isn't for at the outset. And usually the kind of first gate to that, for I think pretty much every design system team that I've worked on, are kind of two things. One is like, do we already have one of these in the design system? Because if we do, we maybe want to look at just adapting that or slightly expanding what it can do, rather than creating a whole brand new thing and having two very similar things for the same need. And the other thing is it actually needed beyond this one team? Like, is it a kind of special snowflake thing, or is it something that is genuinely needed by multiple teams within the organization? And I think this is completely arbitrary, but a kind of rule of thumb that gets bandied about quite a lot, which I think is as good as any other, is once it's needed by three or more teams or in three or more contexts, that's a good point to say, we should probably have something for this in the design system.
So in terms of metrics that you're able to pull in on, it's, you know, wanted by more than three or four teams is great. But in terms of the actual qualitative feedback at the granular level of how it's being received by the end person using the product or service, like, you know, you're from a content design background, so you know what I'm getting at here. Like, where does that come into the conversation in terms of the quant qual?
This is a really hard thing, actually. This is something that I find is often a point of tension in discussions with design system teams and design system contributors, because there are people that kind of say, you know, design system teams deliberate too much. They hold the bar of quality far too high. And actually, if our goal is to work more efficiently, just get something in there. It doesn't matter if it's not perfect. We can iterate it. Just get it out there, get people using it, start to reduce duplication of effort. And then at least we're just working on one thing which we can improve rather than having all these different versions popping up everywhere. So that comes back to what I was saying earlier about the sort of duplication of effort being viewed as this urgent problem to solve. I think where I sit is that design system teams, I think, have a responsibility to, and this is something that Nathan Curtis, who's a design systems consultant in the US, who I quote about 10,000 times a day, every single day of my life, about, honestly, something that he said, which I've parroted a lot since, is design system teams have a responsibility to either match or exceed the level of quality that a product team will produce on its own. Because otherwise, why would they use it, right? So like, if we're asking them to swap their buttons that they've designed in their context for their users, for our buttons, then it's got to at least be a kind of, in terms of quality, it's got to at least be like for like. And ideally, it should be better, because you need to, you know, switching over, adopting a design system is work. So we should acknowledge that and reward that work in some way, and hopefully with an improvement on what they've done.
That's fair enough. You mentioned there a while ago about development documentation, and I know this is something that you're smiling here when I'm saying this. I know this is something that you actually love, okay?
And I do.
It's really interesting for me, because I could not think of anything off the top of my head as more boring, okay? Right? Talk to me about where this fascination came from.
With documentation.
Yeah, just documentation. Oh man, I could think of 1,000 other jobs I'd rather do than that.
Than reading it or writing it?
Just writing it. You haven't to be specific.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people feel that way about documentation. And I think that actually it's often sold as, this is mind-numbingly boring. And I think the reality is it's quite scary for people. I think people say they're bored, and I think what they actually mean is, I don't know if I'm very good at this, and it's a lot of work, and I don't really know how to do it, and I don't have a good framework for doing it. So I'm just going to say that it's really boring. Like, that's how I experience it. And I think for me, why documentation is interesting and exciting is something that I feel really strongly about. And I think you do too, based on the conversations that we've had, is opening up our work, like trying to push back on gatekeeping, trying to really make our work inclusive, accessible, open, inviting more people to participate and to be able to use the things we've built and to contribute to them and to get involved in the work that we're doing. Yeah. And I think there's such a huge opportunity with documentation to do that, to really kind of lower the barrier to entry, to really sort of push the bounds of, you know, even when I'm writing developer documentation, a lot of the time I'm trying to write it in such a way that if you're not a developer, you could broadly understand it, you know, without kind of overdoing it so that it's just completely nonsensical to developers. I really like to try and push the bounds of clear documentation to a level where it's as open and inclusive as it possibly can be. Yeah. And when I've been given the space and time and encouragement to do that, I've seen such amazing results. So that was one of my favorite things about working on the GovUK design system, was that they really backed me and supported me on this. The whole team did, and the organization did. And with the team, you know, we worked on creating really clear documentation that, I think the GovUK design system website is public. Anybody can go and look at it. You can go and look at it. And I think hopefully that comes through in the docs. You know, it's something that we used to get lots of really positive feedback about, was how kind of clear they were. So for me, I think that's why I care about it. I think it has such an important role to play when it comes to inclusion and diversity and all of the things that really matter, I think, within our industry. Whereas when people don't document things, or they only document them in a way that's going to make sense to them and, you know, their mate Chad that sits next to them, it's Chad. Probably, I just completely,
do you know Chad? That from,
I do, yeah, I do. I know many Chads. And I think that, you know, that's where we start to exclude people. I don't think anyone ever does it with that intention. No. But I think that it's, you know, for me, it's the opposite thing of like introducing that intention to make documentation that is inclusive and is accessible to a broad audience of people.
So you mentioned, before we started recording, about you're working on a course.
I am.
How can people sign up to one, the course, if it's ready. I don't think it is ready, though, what you're saying. But how do they follow you, and how do they stay up to date on what you're doing? Do you have a newsletter, or are you on that old school social media platform, Twitter?
I am on that old school social media platform, Twitter. I don't have a newsletter. Yeah, the course. So the course that I'm working on is called Writing for Design Systems, or Writing Design Systems Documentation. So it's going to touch on a lot of the stuff I've just mentioned. This was the point, I think, before we started recording, where your eyes rolled out of your head. But I promise to make it interesting and engaging. It's a good challenge for me, right? If I can make people whose eyes would otherwise roll out of their head care about this, then I've done something right, I think.
Absolutely.
So the best way to kind of keep up to date with that is through Twitter. I'm just Amy_Hoop. I'm also on Mastodon. I think my name is the same, and I'm on the social.design.systems server. Okay. And through my website, all my contact details are on there. At the moment, I'm just getting people to, it's all very informal, and it's just me. I don't have a marketing team. So I'm just saying to people, if you're interested, drop me an email, let me know with your email, and I'll add you to my mailing list, which is a password protected spreadsheet. And when it's when I have details, which I'm hoping to send out in January, I will send them out and get you booked on.
Do people have marketing teams? Is this something that
I don't know. I think people are probably just better at it than I am. But
yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah,
everyone
I
know
have an email signature.
Everyone I know is just kind of muddling through the whole kind of thing, like, so myself included. But Amy, look, I finish every episode with a huge thanks for giving me your time, your energy, and your openness. We're going to start off a new thing, which I'm stealing from Stephen Bartlett, who's one of my favorite podcasters in the UK, where he asks guests to ask a question to the next guest. So it can be a question about anything. So I'm putting you in the spot here, but, you know, a future guest, what is the question that you'd like to put out into the ether about asking our future guest? It can be anything.
Oh my God, no pressure. I would love to know what they think, how they think inclusivity serves their work.
Okay. How we think inclusivity serves their work. It was a great...
But their work in particular, whatever it is that they're trying to do, what role does inclusivity play in the job they're trying to do?
Awesome. Okay, we'll include that one in the next one. Amy, thanks so much for your time.
No worries. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
There you go, folks. I hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you enjoyed it and want to listen to more, why not visit thisishcd.com, where you can learn more about what we're up to and also explore our courses whilst you're there. Thanks again for listening.